Hi, this is Lindsey Miller, and you're listening to the Arkansas Times Week in Review podcast on Friday, September 25th. On this week's edition, we're going to talk about the latest coronavirus news, more signs of our imminent doom, including the death of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and President Trump's unwillingness to say he'll honor the results of the election. We'll also talk protest and the police in Conway, and who knows, maybe some more. I'm joined, as usual, by Max Brantley.
Good afternoon.
So let's start, as we often do, with the latest in coronavirus-related news. Another week, another big spike. But I think the news of the week, from my perspective at least, is just how much this is disrupting school, especially K-12 education. Arkansas filled with items of schools closed down and football games postponed.
And I have just made a hit or miss attempt to keep up with them. I looked at the health department scorecard just a minute ago, and I think they're up to, they're counting something like 2,200 cases in public schools and 3,000 in colleges. And I don't think that begins to represent everything we know and don't know about who's going to school sick, who's not going. You know, it's just kind of a mess. It's not, and the state is still putting immense pressure on people to continue to do as close to normal as possible, which is hard to do. A couple of things happened this week that were interesting. First of all, one TV station did a pretty good story about how school districts are having a hard time finding substitutes for all these teachers that either get sick or have to quarantine because of contact with others. And if you remember, the governor was and Johnny Key were asked about this many times over the course of these last 6 months. And they said, well, that's up to the school districts to worry about. You know, all of the school districts don't get to decide to, for example, go all virtual with so they can deal with something like a substitute problem. But that is a problem. And then, you know, this combination duty for teachers where they're teaching in a classroom and also teaching children who are staying home has just created an immense new workload for them. And I thought one of the most significant developments of the week really was the Conway School District, which is a pretty good school district, a pretty big, good school district that has good results. Their superintendent announced yesterday, I guess it was, that they're going to a four-day schedule. Friday is going to be just kind of a catch-up day. Now, to get the state approval to do this, they're going to have to agree to let kids come to school as usual on Friday and still teach virtually there and provide a lunch and bus service and everything. But I think by and large, but they're not going to give tests on Friday. I mean, it's just really going to be a catch-up day, clearly. And Conway was a school district that wanted to go more virtual than the state would allow them in the beginning. And the state just said no, and they're just finally pushing. And I'm just still of the opinion something's going to have to give. It doesn't look like the cases are going down. I mean, today we had 900 new cases against more than 1,000 yesterday, and the governor says, oh, well, good, it's a drop. Well, yeah, so what? You know, I mean, so 100 case drop. I mean, the health department officials say it's clear that we have community spread all over Arkansas. I got this really desperate note from a woman in Stone County today who said there have been far more deaths than reported. We've had a huge outbreak at a nursing home. We've got a prison unit that has a big outbreak. We have something like a 20% sick or exposed rate in this county, and nobody's doing anything about it. Won't you please help me? I can't testify to her numbers. Some of the facts of it I am familiar with, so there's at least some truth to it. But that's the problem, is we just don't seem to be doing anything about it. And Donald Trump and Asa Hutchinson, with his ready-for-business approach, are encouraging people to think it's not as serious as they think it is. I had a little story this morning that I thought was instructive in its way about an election commission chairman in Izzard County. And somebody had sent me a chain of emails between, he's a Republican, between him and a Democrat who thinks that he'd fallen short on some training and on some hardware for workers, but was really unhappy because he'd remarked in a training session to election workers that this COVID-19 thing's a bunch of bull. It's all over. It's exaggerated. And these masks are crazy. And I'm tired of all this socialism people are imposing on him. And I talked to him about it later. And he said, yeah, I said all that. And he responded at great length in the article. And he says they're going to try and follow mask rules when they vote up in Izard County, which is a very rural county. And they don't have big crowds to deal with like, say, Little Rock does. But, I mean, here's a Republican leader, well thought of enough in his county to run the election commission, who just says COVID-19 is a bunch of junk, is not as bad as the flu. What are you going to do? I mean, I don't think we're heading for a good place if things do get worse in the winter.
And the governor, as you say, does not seem likely to backtrack on any of the reopening that the state has done.
No, and you know, at this point, I mean, I must say, at this point, I don't think he can. I mean, really. I mean, it's just the cow is too far. Are we going to suddenly close all the bars? Or are we going to suddenly make all the schools go all virtual? I mean, we're just not. And there is still this problem on all virtual. You know, there's some really scary numbers that are rising. The big school districts where they're saying, well, these men are in class and these many are at virtual, but then we have these number that we just really can't account for. I mean, they're just not doing anything. And that's happening to larger and smaller degrees all over the state. And a friend of mine, Sybil Hampton, the pioneering educator, sent me an article from Brookings Institute about how internet access is kind of the Civil Rights Act issue of the day. And that's an issue wherever you live. And it's an issue, black, white, rich and poor, about, do you have the machinery? Do you have the internet connection? Can you afford it? And throwing it all open to virtual would at this point all guarantee that an awful lot of people would be left even farther behind. So I mean, it's real easy to say we should do X, Y, or Z, but all the options are difficult.
All right, well, let's move on to even gloomier territory, and that's the death of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and Republicans' predictable but entirely hypocritical move to immediately confirm a new justice.
This is one of those things where, did this happen after our last podcast? I guess it happened Friday night.
Yeah,
and it seems like a year of news has happened since, solely about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who was a heroine of mine and was an amazing member of the U.S. Supreme Court. Well, here the truth is this: Donald Trump and the Republicans are right. If there is a Supreme Court opening, the president should nominate someone, and the Senate should consider it. But the problem here is the towering hypocrisy by which Republicans developed this very successful campaign in 2016 to stymie a nomination by Barack Obama of Merrick Garland for 10 months, simply because they could, but they invented this great thing as let the people decide, let the people vote. And that was 10 months before the election. Now, 40 days before the election, they want to fill the seat because they can, because they got a guy in the White House. And it would be legal, and they can do it, but it's just such a staggering, hypocritical thing. And, of course, the terrible thing is that he's certain to nominate somebody who is like the mirror image of Ruth Ginsburg, who will roll back virtually everything she did. And some of the leading contenders are just scary. I mean, I think they're qualified from an IQ point of view and from a legal education point of view, but God, they're just Neanderthals in their outlook. I mean, roll back gay rights and women's rights and prisoners' rights and just every possible thing you can think of, just a scary bunch. And you know, the president required to appoint somebody that fits the shoes of the person they succeed, but boy, it's just, and the worst part is it's not yet clear he's going to announce his nominee tomorrow, and it'll be terrible, whoever it is. It'll be a woman. That much is clear. We won't be Tom Cotton, so there's at least that. But what happens if they don't get? It'll be difficult to get it done before the election. So what if Trump loses? And what if the Senate changes to Democratic in the next election? Would they push somebody through then? And with Mitch McConnell, the court has been everything. It's the capstone of his career, and he's been immensely successful in stacking the court with these Trump Federalist zanies. And I think he'd stop at nothing to fill that seat. I mean, I'm kind of more or less resigned to the fact that Trump's going to fill that seat either before the election or in the days after, and it's going to be terrible, and that we're just in for the long slog of trying to turn things around over time. And it's a fairly depressing prospect.
Well, the president has said that it's important to have a new justice installed because he feels like it's likely that the results of the election are going to end up before the Supreme Court. He also said that he refused to say that he would honor the results of the election this week.
Yeah, two straight days he's refused to say he'll accept a defeat, and which is, I mean, Daily Show did a great piece on it. Said, here we got a country saying the leader won't leave office, and we got high unemployment and a terrible disease epidemic. Maybe we need to send in some peacekeepers from the Congo to the United States and try and straighten this out. I don't know. But it's really unbelievable that a president would say this. And another sad thing, again, is there have been a few members of Congress who have implicitly taken exception to that view of refusing to accept an election result, but very few. Silence again from everybody from Arkansas. I just put something on the blog. The New York Times sent emails or inquiries to all 26 Republican governors to see what they had to say about Trump refusing to say if he'd accept the election results. And only one governor of 26 responded. It was Asa Hutchinson, and he said he believed in the rule of law, which is not exactly an answer. Right, but you got to give him credit for at least answering the question in some fashion. So, I mean, that's how afraid they are of Trump, or I guess, and afraid of Trump voters. I mean, I still think the belief is, particularly in Republican states like Arkansas, that he has the support of the majority of the people, and they're just not going to cross him. And that's kind of the overarching sadness of all this, is that, you know, he might be reelected. He could be. Could happen.
Yeah. I've regrettably waded into some hometown social media threads of people arguing over politics, and just how corrosive the Trump presidency has been, combined with the rise of social media and disinformation campaigns. It's just, I mean, facts just don't really matter.
And you can't. I have once or twice gotten in to try and correct somebody on something, and you just can't. Number one, they won't believe it. I mean, if they saw it on Fox or got it from whichever right-wing Facebook page, they just say some of the most amazing things, you know? I mean, and it's just pointless to tell the one person you're wrong and give them a citation on it because they won't believe it, but it won't turn this just tsunami of misinformation around that's out there. And it really has become tribal, and it's become personal, and there's just, I was talking to a Democratic senator today, Bruce Malik, who had a rare, wonderful defense by Jim Hendren, a Republican, against some nasty mail ads that are being sent out by Republicans against Malik. And we were just kind of talking about this issue, and it's just so rare that you can get any kind of agreement across the aisle anymore. That's what was so amazing about Jim Hendren, a Republican leader of the Senate, nephew of the governor, saying, hey, this stuff the Republican Party of Arkansas is sending out against Bruce Malik is dirty politics. It's just dishonest. It's just not true. And I thought, wow. And I mean, Hendren is not my hero in every circumstance, but boy, give him credit. And Bruce Malik, conservative Democrat, a good guy. I mean, absolutely solid guy. I mean, he and I don't agree on abortion, to name one thing. I mean, he's pretty much straight pro-life. But I mean, I'm just not going to be a single issue voter, but it's just kind of come down to this thing where being a Republican, I think, particularly means X set of things, and you just don't waver from them. I mean, apostasy is just not accepted. And so it was really striking to have Jim Hendren say anything at all.
All right, well, let's move on to a final topic, and that's police in Conway and how the police department is dealing with protest surrounding the death at Conway police officers' hands of a person who is accused of shoplifting.
Well, I mean, this goes back to February, but I think it's more than that. I think Conway is a city that is accommodated authoritarian police for a long time. That's just the way they do things there. And I guess early this year, a old 30-something-year-old black man was in a grocery store in Conway, and they thought he took something off a shelf, a little toy drone, and opened the box or something. And so they thought he was going to shoplift it. Well, it was in his car. He hadn't even left the store yet. And they started questioning, and then they started asking for IDs, and then they decided to arrest him. And he ran, and they held him down and tased him a couple of times and kneeled on him. And he was saying he couldn't breathe. And he said, my heart's a problem. And they finally let him up and put him in an ambulance, but it was too late. He died. Well, they were cleared, of course. I think the prosecutor's related to a police officer. And then these days, it's just about impossible to convict a police officer of anything. They're immune. If they feel any kind of threat or were acting in an official capacity with what they thought was good reason, suspicion of shoplifting, they can get away with it. But there were some protests about it, pretty peaceful, by the way, although the police tear gassed one group early on after this happened. But a group formed in Conway that in the interest of called Reinvest Conway, and it has ideas about priorities for city spending and wanting to have some more discussions about like banning chokeholds in Conway and having a policy that an officer has to step in if another officer is exceeding use of force guidelines. Things have already been adopted in Little Rock under Frank Scott's leadership, I want to say. And, you know, not really crazy stuff at all, and they've been pretty calm about it. They asked to speak at a city council meeting, and Mayor Bart Castleberry just won't let them speak, won't put them on the agenda. Conway City Council, in fact, doesn't let the public speak at its meetings, which means you've really stifled their voice. Well, these little groups of various demonstrations have continued. One was a few days ago, and, oh, maybe 6 or 8 people stood outside the Conway Police Department with signs talking about, I don't know, police brutality or whatever you talk about. And a couple of them stood on a little, it's about a 3-foot brick wall, decorative wall in front of the police department, and the name of the police department's on the wall, kind of a sign. And the police decided they just weren't going to allow people to stand on their sign or the little patch of ground, dirt, in front of it, which they call a landscape area. It has no landscape in it currently. It's just dirt. And when the people didn't immediately move, they forcefully took them into custody, knocked them down, put the holes on them and arrested them and charged them with criminal trespass and obstructing government operations and resisting arrest and just put the hammer on them. And it seemed a bit of an overreaction to me, but that's me. But of course the response in Conway was if you don't do what the police tell you, they can arrest you. Well, that courts don't hold that view exactly. I mean, you have to have probable cause to arrest somebody, and I'm not sure, absent a specific rule that says you can't sit or stand on the brick wall in front of the Conway Police Department, that you could decree that a crime. Some court's going to decide that eventually, and probably against these people, given the way the courts in Conway run. They are very friendly to the police. But so all that is a background. So there's going to be dual rallies in Conway tomorrow at 11 o'clock. A group called The Return, which is sort of this weird evangelical group waiting for the return of Christ. And they don't like Muslims much. And they don't like gay people much. They're kind of one of these political religio movements. It's going to have a march from Simon Park to the courthouse. And the leader of the march apparently is going to be the mayor, Bart Castleberry. Nice that he's hooked up with this. And this is a national effort, by the way. They're marching all over the country, including in Washington. And the right-wing watch says they're a detestable group, and I'm willing to believe them on that. So the mayor's leading this group on a march to the courthouse. Well, the Faulkner County Coalition for Social Justice, which you can kind of tell from its name where they're coming from, they're having a rally against hate at the courthouse. So when the march arrives, they'll meet the prayer march will meet the rally against hate. Somehow I don't think they'll join hands and sing Kumbaya would be my, now everybody says it's going to be family friendly and all. Now I'm sure the Conway police are going to be on hand and watching carefully. And I'm sure they will enforce the law equally against both these groups. You think? Anyway, I have a cynical view of Conway politics, but I don't know if I said this earlier, but they had a little telephone tree organized to call me and object to an article I did about the arrest in front of the police department. And they invariably would end up with somebody saying, well, we don't want Conway to end up like Little Rock. And that's when I hang up on. That's when the conversation comes to the end. I don't want Little Rock to be like Conway. Thanks very much.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing that the death of the suspected the man who was killed by police, that didn't become national news. That didn't rise to the level of some.
Yeah, the Washington Post wrote a pretty good story on it. I think part of the problem is actually it hasn't spurred a tremendous outpouring in Conway, to tell you the truth. I mean, I think he was an outsider. He did use drugs. He was, as these cases are, he was not the most solid of citizens. But the video was horrifying to me. I mean, it was like, chasing a guy all over a grocery store and tasing him and holding him down because he had a box in his cart that they thought he maybe wasn't going to pay for when he left the store. I mean, it was just weird to me.
Shoplifted, that's the thing about so many of these reactions from the folks you're talking about who, reflexively say, do what the police say, is like, anytime you are breaking the law, that means it's okay for the police to murder you.
To kill you, yes. And that's just the risk you take in disobeying the police is dying. And yeah, so many of these things arise out of selling a loose cigarette, a traffic stop, a stop sign, a headlight out, and somebody ends up dead, and it's inevitably black people. That's the most frustrating thing about these social media things is that if you say words to these people like white privilege, they just think you're crazy. I mean, I wrote a little story this week on the blog, and this is going to come up not next week, but the week after, I think. This right-wing representative from Jonesboro has now been elected to the Senate, Dan Sullivan, is calling all the colleges in Arkansas on the carpet before his committee to have them talk about their courses that teach justice, diversity, about transgender issues, about racial and about racism. Clearly, he doesn't want that kind of crap talked about in college classes. I mean, there is a word that Donald Trump used for countries that he doesn't like much, and I think too often it applies to Arkansas. I'll not say it today, but I mean, things are progressing where, you've heard of Godwin's Law, the thing where it says you've always gone too far in commentary when you start making Nazi comparisons. I think we're just about at the point where Godwin's Law is now inoperable, that brown shirt comparisons are fully in order. And by the way, these bunch of Proud Boys, Arkansas Patriots, they're going to be on the scene in Conway tomorrow, too. These guys that strap up with semi-automatic weapons and military gear and allegedly are out to keep the peace, like the vigilante up in Kenosha that killed two people. So it's a toxic and very volatile stew.
Okay, well, on that uplifting note, let's move on to endorsements.
I got nothing. Oh, well, actually, one more depressing piece of news. I don't know if it's the current New Yorker or the most... I think it's the current New Yorker because I've read it online and we get it, but it's this extensive story about the United States government's persecution of Iranian scientists. I mean, they trumped up some, it went on for years, and they trumped up some political charges against them. But what it really was a counterintelligence operation. they wanted to convert him to be a spy, to go back to Iran and spy on their nuclear operations. And he just wouldn't do it. I mean, he just didn't, he just didn't want to get into that deal. And so he got into this just nightmarish series of court proceedings and jailings. But I bring it up for this. It's fascinating and horrible and extensive and wholly documented in every respect about how badly out of control our government is. But the end of it is, his last stop was in this hell hole of a private detention facility in North Louisiana that's run by LaSalle Corrections Corporation. The conditions there are medieval at best. They're just unbelievably bad, the conditions in which they're kept and the way they got people sick. He got COVID-19. I mean, he'd organized a rebellion at one unit to keep, they'd been in quarantine to keep from putting the sick people in with him, but that they finally couldn't stop it. And of course, he got sick too. He survived. Luckily, he's home in Iran now. But I bring this up only to say Asa Hutchinson has invited these people into Arkansas to run an 800-bed prison, to ship out 800 state prisoners at a lower cost into a facility that will be operated just, and they already operate the one in Texarkana that's getting sued all the time over deaths and maltreatment of prisoners. And his former staff members, who are now the lead political consultants and lobbyists in the state, are lobbyists for this group, LaSalle Corrections. So every time you look at Ace and he does that little spin and grin routine, you think, well, you know, he's kind of a moderate kind of guy. Don't you believe it? He's opened the door to these guys, and it's a horror story. Everywhere they operate, it's a horror story. So I recommend you read it just to give you an idea of your government at work and what Asa has in store for Arkansas.
Okay. Well, I will do that. I have a more lighthearted one, and that's using a safety razor to shave. That's a pandemic thing that I've taken up at the long-time urging of my best friend, who's obsessed with, I guess they call it wet shaving, traditional wet shaving. I don't know. There's some
with the single, with the single blade, with the old
razor. It's a safety razor that you screw the top off and you put an actual razor blade in it. And there's this huge movement now. I just reported a story that was meant to come out in the spring that the pandemic threw off, that I will finally finish sometime soon, about Sterling Soap Company. Which is, I've forgotten where it is, actually. It's in Western Arkansas somewhere. But they're the leaders and international leaders, in fact, I think, in wet shave products for men. So you get this sort of soap stuff, and you use a brush and coffee cup, or they make special cups for it.
There's a little wooden dish you can get to. I did this. 43 years ago,
yeah.
I bought a straight razor and a strop and a Wolverine brush and a soap dish.
Yep.
And I cut the crap out of myself so many times. I said, enough of this.
Yeah. Well, so far so good. I did it for the first time on Saturday, and I haven't, you know, like so many other things, I've only been shaving a time or two a week, and I made it a lot longer. You know, with some decent, you know, beard hair, not too out of control. So yeah, I'm kind of into it. I just had an afternoon shave, and I'm feeling good.
Well, what else you got to do? You
know? I know. Yeah. We need a little.
Why not?
Okay. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Stay safe and healthy and sane, and we will be back next week.
See you around.